Flying can be a lot of fun, but you never know what the outcome of a flight is going to be. Just imagine it's 1947, and you're sitting in the cramped cockpit of the Bell X-1, the research airplane designed to break the sound barrier. And nobody knows if the sound barrier can be broken, but you've got a hunch it can be broken. But there are a lot of good aviation people out there who think that airloads go to infinite at the speed of sound. Now, that makes you a little bit unsure, and you're facing a tough opponent, really the unknown. Now, you've just been dropped from the dark bomb bay of a B-29, and then the sunlight's blinding. And the X-1 is loaded with liquid oxygen and alcohol and is gliding like a rock. About 500 feet below the mothership, you reach for that rocket igniter switch. Now, if you're going to be blown to bits, this is when it'll happen. But you light all four chambers in rapid sequence. And you're pushed back in your seat as the engine gives you a tremendous kick in the butt. You pull your nose up and hold on as you take off like a bullet for the dark part of the sky. And the only sound you hear is the instrumentation and yourself breathing. The P-80 that's flying up ahead of you, which is a chase airplane, grows bigger in your windshield. You pass him like he's standing still, and he tells you he sees all the diamond-shaped shockwaves leaping out of your exhaust. Now, the X-1's power is awesome. You've never known such a feeling of speed while pointing up in the sky. You climb at a Mach number of about 0.92 and level out at 42,000 feet and turn off two of the four chambers so you don't accelerate so fast. Up here, the morning sky resembles dusk. You turn on a third rocket chamber and accelerate out to 0.96 Mach. All that you can think about is, man, what a ride. Then the Mach needle begins to fluctuate, and it goes right off the scale, and the Mach meter only goes to 1.0. So if you extrapolate, the airplane has reached out to about 1.06 Mach number. You get no buffeting and no bump in the road or anything to let you know you've just punched a clean hole through the so-called sound barrier. You've encountered the unknown. You realize that breaking the sound barrier was nothing more than a poke through jello. There wasn't anything keeping us from flying faster than the speed of sound, except our own ignorance. Hi, it's Chuck Yeager. Welcome to my advanced flight trainer. We're here together because you want to fly an airplane. Well, that shouldn't be a problem. You've got at least three things here to help you quickly learn how to fly. My instructions programmed right into the software, more lives than a cat, and more planes than you can destroy in many afternoons of flying. And the odds are real good that you'll get up into the air today, and even better, that you'll come down again. We just have to make sure you don't leave a smoking hole where you land. The first all-important piece of advice that I had to give you is never rely solely on what another pilot tells you about how to fly. And I'm not going to tell you everything there is to know about flying, and I couldn't even if I wanted to. The only real way to learn is by doing it yourself. Experience is everything. Anyway, it gives you something else to do other than just listening to me talk. So fire up the advanced flight trainer right now using the instructions in the manual under the chapter Getting Started. While you have your manual open, you might also want to take a look at the basics of flying to get an idea of how airplanes actually fly. Now, if you're a little fuzzy on that point, turn off your cassette player now, and I'll wait for you to get caught up. Okay, let's go for a little ride. We want something fast and fun, so let's take up the XPG-12. Hopefully, you've got the machine booted already, and you're looking at the menus. So highlight the main menu bar and pull down the missions file. Now highlight demo flight and press return. Now I'll fly this time and you can just sit back and soak it in. This should help you get a feel for some of the instruments in the advanced flight trainer. Watch the artificial horizon instrument on the panel. The artificial horizon tells you how you're flying relative to the horizon. And notice how when we bank, the horizon on the indicator goes vertical. When I roll the aircraft, you'll see the white part of the instrument shift to the bottom. That means we're flying upside down. Now look at the gauge marked VSI. This is a vertical speed indicator. It tells you your rate of climb in thousands of feet per minute. It does this by measuring the change in air pressure as you go up or down. Notice how it tends to fluctuate a lot. And don't trust this instrument too much to tell you whether you're heading up or down. It's better to keep an eye on your altimeter. That's the gauge in the middle with the letters ALT on it. The information on this instrument is critical. It's the only way you know exactly how high you are. Needless to say, you don't want your altimeter to read zero if you're not trying to land. And notice how I pull my nose up when I'm cornering. This is to compensate for the natural loss of altitude caused by the turn. Even though I'm pointed up, I'm not losing or gaining altitude. Eventually, you want to be able to do the same when you're flying these maneuvers. Keep your altitude steady so you don't end up straying out of the canyon or drilling a hole in the ground. Another important instrument on your panel is your airspeed indicator. You've all experienced automobiles, so you know what speed is. The increments are different, though. Airspeed is measured in knots or by a Mach meter. A knot is slightly more than a statute mile, and for our purposes, Mach 1 is about 760 miles per hour if you're at sea level. It may seem like there are a lot of instruments on that panel, and there are. But remember, we're moving in three dimensions, which makes the INTAR process a little more complex than rolling down the freeway. Now get to know all your instruments, but as a beginner, you should concentrate on the altimeter and the airspeed indicator. And with experience, you'll find you won't have to rely solely on your instruments. As a rule, beginners tend to rely too heavily on the instruments. Intermediate pilots are always ignoring their instruments too much. To become an advanced pilot, you have to learn to walk the line between these two extremes. Good flying becomes a natural thing. For instance, you're flying level just by keeping your eye on the real horizon that's in front of you. But when you can't see it, you'll refer to your instruments. Likewise, when you're landing, you'll gauge your distance from the ground by looking out your window, not just at your instrument panel. As you approach the ground, you'll see black balls that are the all-purpose terrain and advanced flight trainer. The balls grow larger as you get closer to the ground. A good pilot will land more accurately by using these than just using the altimeter. You can also get a pretty good sense of how fast your approach is by keeping your eye on the terrain, even though you refer to your airspeed indicator. Pretty soon you'll find yourself in sync with the machine. In fact, so plugged into your controls that your mind and your hands become the heart of its operating system. You'll make that airplane talk, and like a good horse, the machine will know when it's in competent hands. There are more instruments on your panel that need to be explained, but we'll wait until you get your hands on them. In the meantime, just turn me off and open up your manual to controlling AFT planes to learn the commands to fly the advanced flight trainer planes. I'll just wait here until you're done. Okay, let's get you up in the air and flying. Now, I'm going to come with you, so don't sweat it. Heck, at least you'll have a flight instructor with you. And I sure remember my first morning in the cockpit of a fighter airplane. World War II had just begun, and a small group of us were training out in the Nevada desert to be the 363rd Fighter Squadron. I climbed into the cockpit of that P-39, and the squadron leader explained all the switches to me. He says, "Okay, Jaeger," he said, "when you take off, raise the nose gear at 60 miles an hour, and it'll get airborne around 90 or 100, then raise your landing gear and keep her wide open until you've picked up some speed. Then cut the power back to cruise." And he said, "the same way on landing." He said, "it's no problem." Then he slammed the cockpit door and signaled me to fire up the engine. And that was the end of the instructions. "But don't worry, though, I'm not going to put you through that. But you are going to get up in the air. Now, move the highlight to flight training and press return." Now move the highlight to takeoff and press return. Press P on your keyboard. We're now in a Cessna Trainer, which is something like those old driver education cars. You know, a set of controls for me and one for you. Here's how the controls work. In the center of the windscreen are two squares. The smaller one is attached to your control stick, and when you move your control stick, that square will move. The larger square is my control stick. For now, you just want to keep your square inside of mine. I'll actually control the airplane, but by keeping your square in mind, you're going to learn how to take off. Now take a look at the right side of the windscreen. You'll see two lines. This is the throttle position. And as you may have guessed, the longer line is my throttle, the one that's actually hooked to the airplane. The shorter line is your throttle, the one you're going to follow mine with. When you climb into the cockpit, take a moment to look around. Now on your left is a brake switch and the altimeter in hundreds of feet. Moving to the right, you see the airspeed indicator in knots and the artificial horizon. Next is your compass, then the vertical speed indicator in hundreds of feet. On the far right is a landing gear switch. In the center below the gauges are two levers. One is for the flaps, the other is the throttle. Now, go ahead and press P again on your keyboard. Following my cue, increase your throttle to 100% by using the plus key. Now hold a stick steady and watch the airspeed indicator. When it reaches 80 knots, I'm going to pull the stick back. Keep your square inside mine. And go ahead and turn me off until you finish the flight instructions. You finished with the takeoff? Let's go up a few more times, only with you at the wheel. Now press the I key when you're ready to control the plane yourself. When you've mastered the takeoff, you can learn how to land the plane the same way, by letting me guide you until you get the hang of it. Work your way through all the basic maneuvers and combinations in flight school, climbs, dives, turns, and so forth. Until then, turn the tape off. Congratulations on passing your solo. If you're like I was, you've probably already taken your plane out for a joyride or two. And I can never understand a pilot who could walk by an open cockpit and not want to crawl inside and go for a flight. For me, an open cockpit is an invitation to have fun. That's the feeling that Ned Lerner and I wanted to convey when we made Advanced Flight Trainer. And we didn't want to bog the user down with a lot of buttons and nonsense. Sure, there's some of that in flying, but that's not what makes a pilot crawl into an airplane and risk busting his butt. He flies because he likes to fly. And Ned wanted to make a simulator that made flying fun. So he gave the Advanced Flight Trainer the best animation speed and controller response of any personal flight simulator. When you go to do a roll, the machine responds instantly. A good airplane handles that way, and a good simulator should too. You already know the basics of flying now, so you can branch out and try any of the planes in Advanced Flight Trainer. Take a look at the different planes. The earliest ones you can fly are the World War I aircraft. Now, they're similar to the Cessna you've been flying, except that they're cockier. The Cessna is stable, real forgiving to a beginner. Now, the Spad and the Camel, on the other hand, were designed to dogfight, so they had to be maneuverable and consequently were a little unstable. They're somewhat underpowered by today's standards and they don't climb very high, but the men who flew them were real pioneers. These earlier pilots developed most of the stunt maneuvers you see still performed today, and they did it in planes made entirely out of wood and canvas. That took a lot of courage. Still, one of my favorite planes is the P-51 Mustang, the plane that I flew over Europe in World War II. The P-51 was the best American fighter of the war, and she was a dogfighter's dream. equal to anything the enemy could put up against her. With her 2,000-mile range, her terrific speed, and maneuvering, she turned the war around by protecting our bombers all the way to the targets and back. Flying a fighter in those days was different than today. Maneuvering was tighter. There was no fly-by-wire controls, and we didn't have a heads-up display in our cockpits as you do. I wish I'd had as good in my day as you do an advanced flight trainer. Your planes are outfitted with all the modern conveniences, and you get to sit in the comfort of your home or office where it's warm. If you want an idea of what it was like for most of my flying career, go over to the window on a cold morning, open it up all the way, put your feet in a bucket of ice water, and then fly for several hours without relieving yourself. That's how it was. The prop planes are challenging in their own way, but modern jets are a different breed altogether. Working with Ned on Advanced Flight Trainer, we decided people should also get to experience the excitement of high-speed jets. Now let's face it, they are fun. So Ned went to work simulating supersonic flight. We chose the state-of-the-art fighters like the F-16 and F-18. We even included some unusual designs like the SR-71 and the Space Shuttle so you could fly on the cutting edge of technology. These aircraft fly so high and so fast, it taxes the imagination. The difference among the jet fighters are sometimes subtle, but they're real. Now, Ned made a big effort to accurately simulate the differences between all the airplanes. For instance, the F-16 is a real lightweight. It's quicker and more maneuverable. And the F-18 is an all-weather fighter, more advanced technology. It wouldn't make sense to have both planes in there if your program didn't reflect their actual differences. And you'll find that each model has different characteristics if you're sensitive to them. Having 17 different planes at your disposal is quite an advantage for any pilot. Now, pilots have told me that the part of my career they envy most is the fact that I got to fly more than 180 different types of planes. Now, 180 different planes in one career is really uncommon. A majority of your pilots don't get to fly more than a couple different kinds of planes. I was lucky in that I was a maintenance officer for several years after the war, and part of my responsibilities as a maintenance officer was to test every aircraft that came off the maintenance line. I wasn't a test pilot at all at the time, yet I got to test every plane that came on the base. Most pilots have to wait for seniority to be assigned hot planes. You're lucky, though. All you have to do is hold down the Alt key and press A, and bingo, you're in a new plane. Broad experience makes all the difference. The ideal pilot would know the whole history of aviation through experience, everything from SPADs to space shuttles. Every airplane can teach you something if you're willing to learn. So go ahead, get to know the various planes in Advanced Flight Trainer. Take them out and fly them however and wherever you like. While you're at it, explore the Advanced Flight Trainer world. Get to know where various airports and landmarks are. And use the different viewing modes to get different perspectives on your flight. I always wished I could watch myself fly. For an advanced flight trainer pilot, it's just the press of a button. You get camera zooms and quick cuts, flybys, and views from a chase plane or the tower. It's as if you were the 6 o'clock news team watching your own flight while it's happening. Okay, you can turn me off now for a while and we'll get back together when you feel ready to let your skills really be tested. You've mastered the controls and you've tried out the different planes. Now you want to find out how really good you are. Now, pilots are naturally competitive. First, you want to pit yourself against other pilots in some air races. The courses are tricky and the competition is always stiff. Every time you complete a course, Advanced Flight Trainer creates a competitor whose performance matches what you just did. You're going to have to beat yourself every time you leave the runway at Reno. Now, my favorite mission in Advanced Flight Trainer is the formation flying section. This is the place to do your aerobatic stunts and practice sticking to to another plane's tail in fast and furious chases. Much of the action in the formation flying resembles dogfighting. Aerobatic stunts are really nothing more than refined air combat tactics. Rolls, loops, Cuban eights, and all the other stunts are just means of pursuing and evading other planes. I was trained as a combat pilot, so naturally whatever resembles dogfighting appeals to me a lot. The trick is to get onto your opponent's tail and stick to it. The military pilots call that waxing your opponent's tail. I call it fun. When you get good enough to stay with me, you're really getting good because I've got a lot of experience. At that point, you're ready for the ultimate test of your abilities, the test pilot sections. In the meantime, turn off this tape and start with the dead man routine for a real challenge. Was that you scampering after me a while ago? So you think you're a hot pilot now and you need a new challenge? Well, the hottest job around is test piloting. As a test pilot, you investigate the performance characteristics of an aircraft to determine whether or not it meets its specifications. Now that kind of flying requires real precision. You've got to be able to fly such that your measurements are accurate and consistent. And you're going to find that this is as much a test of the pilot as the aircraft. Testing aircraft is not only demanding, it's very exciting. As a test pilot, you're always pushing the edge of the envelope, trying to find out what the limits of a design are. It's your job to find out things like an airplane's maximum altitude, speed, and rate of climb, and its speed in a stall. There's plenty of opportunity to make mistakes. Now, sometimes those mistakes are fatal. In test piloting, the real hero is the one who survives. I'll give you a good example. In 1953, I was given the assignment of testing the Bell X-1A, the follow-on aircraft to the X-1. And on the X-1A, we were at 80,000 feet, accelerating through 2.2, 2.3, 2.4 Mach number. At around 2.3 Mach number, the airplane began to yaw. Now, the Bell engineers had told us, you know, not to take the airplane beyond 2.3 Mach number because the airplane would become a little unstable. Well, they were right. As we got up to around 2.5 Mach number and ran out of power, the airplane was yawed almost 40 degrees and the dihedral effect caused the outside wing to came up. The airplane flipped inverted, pulled about 3 negative Gs, and then started swapping ends. And at that point, the canopy busted out, my pressure suit inflated, and my face piece fogged up on the pressure suit. Now, fortunately, I was able to find a rheostat that turned up the heat on the face piece and cleared it up. And at that point, I found out the horizontal stabilizer was trimmed full nose down, and the airplane was in an inverted spin. And after going through a lot of wild gyrations, I finally retrimmed the horizontal stabilizer back to neutral and put the controls with the spin direction, which flopped it into a normal spin. At some 25,000 feet, I used opposite rudder and forward stick and popped it out of the normal spin. And then by that time, I had the lake bed spotted. And since I'd spun many, many different kinds of airplanes and had been trained how to recover from a spin in the test pilot school, it really wasn't difficult for me to realize what was going on in the X-1 and flip the airplane from an inverted spin to a normal spin and then recover. Mm-hmm. I barely remember the next moments because I'd taken quite a beating. But then my head cleared and I was at 5,000 feet lining up with the lake bed outside of Edwards Air Force Base. I was gliding in from the other side of Mojave doing around 270 miles an hour. And I started to believe that I really was going to make it. I put her down a little hard, but let me tell you, no landing was as sweet as that one. Now, that ride in the X-1A is a good example of the qualities a good test pilot has to have. Now, to survive that spin took everything I knew and had ever experienced in a cockpit, so that maybe 1 hour less flying time could have been the difference between drilling a hole or landing safely. Now, experience is the most important thing a pilot can have. One of the last questions many pilots ask before they auger in is, what else can I try? And I saved myself by sheer instinct, but a knowledgeable instinct based on hundreds of previous spin tests. experienced at spinning down to earth, I was less disoriented than others who had done it fewer times. And I made the right moves to save my butt where maybe someone else wouldn't have. You know, there's no such thing as a natural-born pilot. And no matter what your aptitude or talents, becoming a proficient pilot is hard work, really a lifetime's learning experience. Now, for the best pilots, flying is an obsession, the one thing in life they must do continually. Now, I've flown in just about everything with all kinds of pilots in all parts of the world, and there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between any of them except for one unchanging fact. The best, most skillful pilot had the most experience. The more experienced, the better he is, and it's that simple. If I had a choice between dogfighting a less experienced pilot in a better airplane than mine, or a more experienced guy in an airplane that wasn't as good, I know how I'd choose. Now, I worked hard at being a good pilot because I love to fly. If you love what you're doing, you'll get pretty good at it. Flying has been the motivation for all the changes in my career. Rank or pay never really mattered that much to me. I loved being in the Air Force because that's where all the good airplanes were. I logged over 12,000 hours in all sorts of planes because flying was fun. Unfortunately, many people don't consider fun an important item on their daily agenda, and unlike flying, learning how to take pleasure from living can't be taught. Now you have the chance to enjoy hours of flying too. Pleasure is the key thing. You want to experience some of the thrill of flying in a way that doesn't mean going out and joining the Air Force or paying for expensive lessons or possibly buying the farm. So fire up Advanced Flight Trainer and climb into the cockpit of the plane that suits you the most. And go ahead and fly at full throttle. Whatever you do, you'll live to fly another day.